Daniel Browning here, filling in for Ellen Fanning on Life Matters. What does a truly Australian architecture look like? I've thought about this. It could be a house made, I guess, of corrugated iron and steel with enormous verandas. There are prisms of light streaming in through vast windows. Simple and beautiful, sitting lightly on the landscape. A Glenn Murcutt house. Glenn is one of Australia's most eminent architects. His designs draw on a very Australian sensibility. And they've been described as exquisite sheds. But in recent years, he's been working on perhaps his most ambitious project yet. It has a very different lineage, an Islamic one. Glenn Murcutt is with us now to tell us more about his huge new building, which opens next year in Newport in Melbourne. Glenn Murcutt, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Daniel.
And we're going to talk about your remarkable life, which begins, I think, in Papua New Guinea. Mm. You grew up speaking Tokpisin, the pidgin language in PNG.
Yes indeed. I arrived in Australia at the age of six when the Japanese arrived in Papua New Guinea. We had to leave on the scorched earth policy, and my only language at that stage was communicating with the local people, pidgin English.
And when you got here, back to Australia, you could only speak pidgin.
Yes, and so I really didn't start school until I was 8 years of age. And my parents, best known to them why, decided that I should speak English before I went to school. And I think that might have been a mistake. It might have been good to just go to school and with the rough and tumble of speaking pidgin and learning English at the same time.
When did you fall in love with architecture?
Well, my father had a wonderful joinery shop, and he used to bring home all these leftover blocks of timber. And I remember very well at the age of around, I was probably just 9 or 10 at the time, and I used to build these buildings using these blocks and then taking a battery and, you know, the torch battery and with a copper wire, and I put lights in each of the rooms. Then I charged my parents a penny to come and see the buildings at nighttime. So my father thought immediately, look, this kid is really interested in designing objects and buildings and spaces and light and what have you. And so there was no question in my childhood about what I was going to be. From probably the age of 14, I knew I was going to be an architect.
What fascinates me about architecture is its power. Good architecture, and I'm not talking about multi-million dollar buildings, The power of architecture to alter our lives and to produce, well, happiness.
There's no question. When you look at different programs, they're all different, you know, in different typologies in buildings. One of some of the most important things is things like prospect and refuge, the idea to be able to look out, see beyond, but feel secure within. And so the connection between inside and outside is really important. The space between is really extremely important in many buildings, not all buildings, but most buildings can benefit greatly from that sort of thinking.
I can actually say that I have slept in a Glenn Murcutt designed building. Now, I was on an artist retreat at Bundanon in some beautiful quarters. I was working, but I was allowed to stay in the quarters at Bundanon, just kind of near Nowra. And it's on a beautiful slope overlooking the shoal water. And I just remember there was a ribbon of glass. That was my prospect, as you describe it, out to the Shoalhaven River.
Yes.
And I don't know, I just remember sleeping very soundly. Although the bed wasn't terribly comfortable, that's not your fault. I just remember sleeping very soundly in that building.
Yes, well, that project, it's the project at Riversdale that was designed in collaboration with Wendy Lewin and Reg Lark. And it was a wonderful project for each of us to be working on. And it was, of course, the project that was the gift of the Boyd, Arthur Boyd and Yvonne Boyd to the Australian people, and to have been selected to do the Education Centre was a wonderful thing for us.
Mm. Now, let's talk about this project in Melbourne, in Newport. You were commissioned or approached in 2005?
It's about late 2004, I think.
Tell us about this. It's an Islamic centre?
Yes.
Or a mosque. Tell us about that place.
First of all, I need to acknowledge that I'm working with a wonderful young architect from down there, Hakan Elevli. Mm. His practice has taken it on. He's from the Turkish community, Islamic, and to be working with somebody so marvellous, so giving, is a great reward. Mm. The project came as a consequence of my chairing the jury for His Highness the Aga Khan, and the community looked up the Aga Khan site and saw there was an Australian that chaired it, and they hadn't heard of anything I had done. They looked up the web, and I don't have a web page, but there, you know.
You don't have a web page?
No, but there's a ton of stuff there. So they thought, oh, there's somebody.
Thought you might be sympathetic.
Yeah, they might be sympathetic, yeah. Mm. And he was somebody in Australia, whereas they were looking for somebody international initially, and it allowed a meeting was organised, and we had a wonderful meeting, and I met Harkin, I met the community, and in a very short time we all said, yes, let's go. And, of course, there were many years between that meeting and when we really started on the project. You know, they had to buy the land, they knew the site, they had to pay for the land before anything could be done. The community has been amazing.
Now, there was a... We're going to talk about the documentary which screens on ABC TV, but there was a particularly harrowing time in your life when you were building, working on this construction. Mm. Your son had been diagnosed with terminal cancer at a very young age, just 46. Mm. But what did the community at Newport, for whom you were designing this building, what did they do? How did they respond to that loss in your life?
You know, I was in a very bad way myself as a father. My son Nick was an architect also. He and Rachel, his wonderful wife, had done some fine work to the point where they had received national awards for their work. And to be diagnosed at 46 with terminal cancer, lung cancer in fact, a non-smoker, just one of those dreadful, dreadful cancers, totally shattering, and it put me into a state where I just frankly could not work. But the community were fantastic. They kept in close contact with me. They had special prayer meetings on Fridays, praying for my son Nick and praying for me. I mean, this from the Islamic community was an extraordinary thing. So beautiful, so kind, so gentle, so caring. It was just amazing.
Did working on the building, having, you know, we often talk about, people often say a way through grief is to throw yourself at work. I mean, I certainly had, that was some advice given to me when my mother passed away many years ago. And I, for the life of me, couldn't figure out how that would be any kind of tonic for my soul. But was it for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I, of course, lost both my parents. I'm 80 years of age now. And so losing parents is never a joyous experience. It's a pretty tough experience. But let me tell you, you have no idea what it is to lose a child. It is brutal. It is a bottomless sorrow. And for 3 years, I found it very difficult to do any new work. What I did was I was able to stall some of the new work, and I concentrated on the work at hand, which was the mosque. And that was really important because it was a whole new program I'd never worked on before. It meant a huge discipline in thinking. And whilst my wife and I work in collaboration on a number of projects, we weren't working in collaboration on this. And then I showed my wife, who's Wendy Lewin, who is an architect, the building that I was doing, and she looked at it and she said, "You can do better than that." And of course, she's a fantastic critic. And I thought, oh, okay, so I'll better stick to it. And, you know, the next day I came up with this process of light and understanding light. Then I looked up the whole meaning of colour in Islam. And there was a whole new set of conditions that I could work with, which is working with colour. And, of course, if you look at the Islamic flags, you'll see often green, red, yellow, black and white. These are very much the colours of Islamic flags. But it's also meaningful because green represents the oasis, which represents life, which is also represents nature. And yellow represents paradise. The red represents blood as strength of character, strength of attitude. And these were beautiful things to be working with. So I've been able to integrate these colours into these lanterns that are two and a quarter metres wide by 3 metres high. And they are also wind chimneys that allow ventilation, because we have insect meshed screens right at the top of these, so in summertime the air can be pulled through and over the water ponds. So we've got water ponds at the edges of the building. The air will come down over the water ponds, which will be filled with white lotus, yellow water poppies, nadu, things like that, and over that water will come the cooler air.
Now, those lanterns on top of the Islamic Centre, they did present some challenges, and I know that they were the cause of some hold-ups. Just describe those lanterns very briefly for
us. Yes, well, of course, with all things in architecture, there must be a good basis. And when I started looking at the structure of the roof, instead of the structure going at right angles to walls, I put them at 45 degrees to all the walls. So the columns, which run down, are 3 bays wide by 8.3 metres centre to centre and 5 metres back the other way. Very important numbers, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, all the odd numbers are very important to this particular sect of the Islamic community. Then the diagonals then produce at intersection, together with the parallel to the wall, triangles. And those triangles, three-sided, which is important, are projected 3 metres high, and what is so nice about it is they're oriented, the green to the north, yellow to the east, red to the west, blue to the south. So that in summertime when the sun rises in early morning south of east by 30 degrees and sets south of west by 30 degrees, then you've got the coolness of the day at the beginning and the coolness at the evening, the blue light's coming through. And as it moves in the seasonally into the east, it goes into the yellows, which is the absorption of light of the early morning sun, the green to the north, and then the red to the west that absorbs that orange-red colour of the sun as it goes towards that west. And so within the building, you can tell the season, and you can tell the time of day by the light that's coming into the building.
Fascinating. I can feel the your love for this building. It's infectious. Glenn Merkert, thank you so much for being my guest here on Life Matters. It's great to meet you.
Thank you, Daniel.
That's Glenn Merkert. And Glenn Merkert, Spirit of Place, the documentary, airs tonight on ABC TV at 9:30 p.m.
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia. If you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell, media, technology, culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.